Sorry?
Yeah. There's no shame. Okay, where we're up to essentially in Revolvi Sefer is page Chaf Beis. Page Chaf Beis, which is entitled Ava. And tonight's topics are really going to be two different issues. And one is the issue of Ava, which we need to concretize a little bit more, even though we've spoken about it in the past. And finally, as you see, the next topic on page Chav Gimel, Revolvi gets to what's on many parents' mind, and that is Anisha, and that is appropriate reward and punishment. Revolvi writes, Nitponim, we're in Israel, Nitponim ksat bedarkei achinuch. Mahen hadrachim hanechonot sheyesh lelechet behem kasher anu baim lechanech et yaldeinu. Echad habiologim hagdolim matza divrei nifla. Revolvi goes on to describe that scientists have found that a cat, a monkey, all animals, in contrast to a human being, when they give birth to its offspring, so then the offspring is much more prepared for the outside world than an infant. That we know. And they add a mathematical ha'ara, which I was not aware of, and that is the amount of time that the child is in utero is only half of the time that it needs to come out to be prepared for the world like a kitten is when it comes out. So, in terms of developmental stages. In other words, the next 9 months, a child for all its formation needs 18 months really in utero to come out to be as prepared for the world as a lahavdil, as a cat and a monkey needs to be. That's what Revolvi brings out from the biologist. It's easier to say in English than it is in Hebrew. What emerges from this, continues Revolvi, Hamaskana ha'olecha mikach, hi shehatinok tzarech limatzeh betoch harisa shel bayit. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, we all know that a kitten has so much more autonomy than a child does when it's born. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu destined that the infant require the gestation not only in its mother's womb, but there's a gestational period in the house itself, which is another womb for the child. And then, and 9 months later, Be'erech, leaving aside the science is not as important for us right now, then the child is ready to go out to the real world. Revolvi writes, "Harisa shel habayit b'loshen acheret." What is the nurturing of the home? That's the warmth. And of course, he says over the famous story that we all know, that once upon a time in the kibbutzim, children were raised in a totally different setting, in a children's kindergarten, away from the parents, and they saw that the children were emotionally stunted. Rabosai, warmth means two things. Last time when we spoke about warmth, what we spoke about was, we spoke about physical warmth. Tonight, the first part that in Ava that I want to talk about is emotional closeness. Emotional closeness. I want to emphasize that what we discussed in Shalom Bayis rears its head again. I'm not going to do it as much detail as we did last time, but emotional closeness is really achieved in the same manner that we spoke about in Shalom Bayis. And that is, we pointed out from Rashi al HaTorah that there are really three madregos of Shmiah. There are three ways in the Torah that the word Shmiah is used. For example, we have Nasa v'Nishma. Nasa v'Nishma is Kabbalah. Then, the lowest madrega of Shmia is HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this by the way is only Lusas and Rashi again, Shamati is Plunos B'nei Yisrael. There HaKadosh Baruch Hu hears, but he rejects. Nasa v'Nishma is accept. And then there's a middle ground that Paro uses in description of Yosef HaTzadik, and that is that he's able l'shmoa chalom v'l'ftor oso, that he's able to listen and to understand. So sometimes a person listens and rejects. Sometimes a person understands, and then there's a higher madrega, which the Targum by Nasev Nishma doesn't use it by these other words, and that's to be mekabel. Not only to hear, to understand, but even to be mekabel. And I saw that in this fantastic book, a lot of what we're going to say tonight is from this book. Although I mentioned to you, I got stuck before this year in speaking with the Rav Tversky and Dr. Yitzi Schefter about one nekuda, which we'll be mefakbek a little bit with. But otherwise, there's some beautiful, beautiful things over here. And that is, she aligns that there are all the three important parts of emotional closeness. There are three parts that are necessary for emotional closeness with a child. And her lashonos are the following. And we'll show that they mamish again, wrap and relate to what we've spoken about before. And that is, number one, is acknowledge. Acknowledge. Number two is to accept. These are her lashonos. She doesn't quote any of these psukim. It's mamish accept, and I would add, and understand. This is Sarah Hannah Radcliffe. And finally is to be with. If you think about it, that's exactly. Acknowledge is this one. Accept and understand is l'shmoa. And to be with means to become one with, like Nasa V'nishna, to become one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All three of these ideas are ideas that we've spoken about in the past. But let's talk about now what Derech Agav, somebody, one of my Chavrusa told me, asked Rav Nemetzal, what does the word Shema mean for Shema Yisrael? You have to be mechaveh. So Rav Nemetzal, in three Hebrew words, said exactly this. He said to hear, to listen, and to accept. Mamish, these three. I don't remember the exact Hebrew words he used, but mamish this yisod. So this yisod is a very important yisod in Tanakh as well. What exactly are these three concepts? What is to acknowledge? What does it mean to accept? I'm being Moses. She uses the lashon accept. I would add to understand. This is page 35. In raise your kids without raising your voice, and then what does it mean to be with? the first, the most important thing that we've spoken about in communication, and this is what all creates emotional closeness, is for a person to show the other that they're really listening. That they're really, really listening. I see that you're upset. You look worried. I see you're upset at me. Second thing is not only to show that you're listening, but to show that you're mekabel what it is and understand what the child is saying. That's the second darga. And the third is not only to show that you really understand what you're saying, but being with them. That was the third. What does that mean? When feelings are strong, the parents should be with them or sit with them. Sometimes this means literally sitting beside the child quietly after acknowledging and accepting the feeling. Now, Rabbi Ol said, this is important. It needs to be added to what Revolvi is saying. I'm sure that this is what's behind Revolvi's idea of warmth. And that is, it's not enough just to be there, just to be physically there. It's not enough even to show the physical warmth, but there are these three dargos. Again, that is, acknowledge, to accept, and to be with. And without it, so then a lot of times, children don't feel that they're emotionally close to their parents. They might even be physically close, but emotionally close, they're not always there. Sounds easy, right? Let's propose a challenge, though, when it gets a little bit difficult. Child comes home from school and says to their father, boy comes home and he says, Daddy, No one in the class likes me. No one likes me. Now, our gut reaction immediately when we hear the expression of that emotion is, that's not true. No, there's so many people that do like you. Why? Why is that our gut reaction? Well, there's a certain chachma in our gut reaction, and that is the child's self-perception. We don't want the child to perceive that no one likes them. But when a parent gives that response and says, no, you, that's not true. Your friend David next door, he likes to play with you. Your cousin Sarah enjoys playing with you. In all those instances, the parent has actually repelled the emotional closeness, and it's very, very innocent, very, very sincere, but runs the risk of repelling the emotional closeness. What's the order? To acknowledge, first to repeat what they say, to understand why they feel that way, and then push it to be with them. Sounds like Shalom Bayis all over again. But that's what it is, yes. Emotional closeness is important for Shalom Bayis, and Chinuch HaBanim as well. It's something that's extremely, extremely important. So it goes back to the psychologist that we always joke about. It's the easiest way to earn $300 is find a way to get an easy PhD and go into Rogerian psychology. And what do? You say over the individual's feelings. We spoke about that with one's wife and with one's child. And Mirtz Hashem, when they reach that cognitive stage, to create that emotional closeness that you're understanding them. Often this happens with girls, that they'll come over to their mother and they'll say, "Mommy, I'm so fat." The mother looks at them and she really doesn't feel that the girl is very fat. It reminds me of a Reader's Diet. It's always a catch-22. Men, when they're caught in the position when their wife says they're fat, there's a Reader's Digest joke that a woman turns to her husband and she says, "How fat am I in this dress?" So her husband stops. He just doesn't know what to say. He doesn't know how to react. So he says, "Just fat enough." But it's not an easy thing, because many times we're talking about where it's a very common phenomenon. This is shiurim by themselves about the women's self-perception of figure and so on. But when a girl comes home to her mother and she says that she's fat, the mother doesn't think at all she's fat. One of the worst things that either the father or mother could do is simply reject out of hand her sense of perception. If it's perception, as we've spoken about in the past when it came to Shalom Bayis, if it's her perception of herself, if it's her perception, then vis-a-vis herself, it is reality. Radcliffe has a very beautiful application of this discussion. And this happens all the time in homes. It's happened many times in our homes, particularly when there are more than one sibling. There's something that happens often and needs to be thought about. Often, let me read you the account. She describes, the child says, "Why does Becky get to go out with you and I never get to go out? It's not fair." This happens. When the Bezer Hashem, when there are a few children in the home, this is pretty common. "Parent, I'm just taking Becky to get some shoes. We'll be back very soon." The child says, "But I want shoes. You never get me any shoes." Now the mistake is if the parent just leaves with this rejection and says, "It's not true. I get you shoes when you need them." Of course it's ridiculous, but the child for some reason is feeling rejected. What the parent needs to say is, "Yes, you really want to come with me. I can see that. And I like your company too. It's just that Becky needs to get some shoes and you don't now. And it's hard for me to get her shoes when you're with me at the same time. Now Radcliffe adds something which isn't always necessary. She has the parents concluding, what if I bring you back some bubble gum from the candy store? Would that help at all? But the child doesn't accept that. No, I want to come. You never get me any shoes. Again, the parent empathizes. You just want to come. Bubble gum won't help. And I understand that you think that mommy never gets you any shoes. That's sad. The child says, and this is classic in Rogerian psychology, yes. In other words, when you hit that yes, then that's a sin. And when the client says back to the therapist, yes, exactly, then you're on the right track. That means you've shown the individual that you really understand them. And the parent says yes. And then the child in Radcliffe's dream situation comes back and says, what kind of gum? And the parent says, I was thinking of your favorite, red bubble gum. The child says, can I have two pieces? Yes, I'll bring you two pieces. Now, the truth is, one doesn't even need the bubble gum, Linnaeus, all the time. We'll talk about reward and punishment. One doesn't always need it. The fact that the parent and children can be upset, and children can have that perception, and it's okay, and our children are not always going to be happy. It doesn't work that way in anybody's home that I'm aware of, that children are always happy. But at the end of the day, if the parent has shown the child that they understand how they're feeling, so then it's a totally different ball game. Yes, Ravdani.
I realize this
is
kind of depends on the age.
But okay.
If the child, not because they feel rejected, they want to go out because they want to have a nice time. They're bored in the house, and it sounds like fun to go out with Abba and go to the store. I like going to the store. It's not because.
And you and like they're saying that you never buy me shoes, or they're not saying that.
Maybe they're saying that.
Okay, so.
But he, I mean, in the story, it became that. But at first, it was just I want to go.
Right.
And the excuse was, you never take me out.
Right.
Sometimes
right.
Kids can come up
with clever excuses.
Right.
I think you're right. I think if the parent really believes that what the child is saying is not the stated reason, that they really are not feeling deprived. Well, let's say the child says, let's forget about the shoes. Let's say the child says, you never take me out. I never go with you.
Okay?
Then we take the exact same case. Let's leave the shoes out. The exact same case. The child says, you never take me out. So the parent empathizes with that emotion. Doesn't reject it. Still might decide to take the other child out, not this one, but the child doesn't feel that they've been entirely rejected. They feel that they've been acknowledged, understood, now be with, they haven't done, right? The parent can't. When you're juggling four kids, and even two kids often, the parent can't often be with at that particular moment. So that we'll discuss later. That's a whole shiur by itself, and that is the 10-minute rule. Of always trying to spend 10 minutes every day with every single child. And so then, what I would recommend is that when you have those 10 minutes, you could say, I know that earlier today you felt like you wanted to be with me, and now I have time to be with you. It could very well be, like you said, that the child's, or like you alluded to, that the child's emotion sometimes is even valid. That they really feel that they're not getting enough time with the parents. If a child is saying it, child doesn't think of complaints just because they want to. There could very well be a reason of why they're feeling this way. Okay, so that's the first topic of tonight. The first topic of tonight is this yisod that's called acknowledge, accept and understand, and then finally to be with. And I think this backs up what Rivoldi over here is emphasizing is to create chom, to create warmth. Sometimes if the warmth is not created through an emotional closeness, so then even the physical warmth is not enough. Already in the past, we emphasized how important it is to show the physical warmth to children. Now, Rivoldi, this is where, in many ways, he took on many people from the old school. He gets to the topic of anisha, punishment. Kana makom lagat benoseh shekol kach marbim l'shol amav. Hanashat yiladim. Rabosai, before we go on, I want to emphasize that I've told you a few times that I hold that this whole topic is really a tiny topic. As you're going to see how I'm going to even deal with it, Be'ezer Hashem. For most parents, when they come to parenting, often when they go to, let's say, a parent coach, their first few questions will be about how do I reward and how do I punish. And Lania's deity, that is like one of the last se'ifim of the whole sugya. And Revolbi also is going to emphasize a certain point, and that fits in with the whole idea that the Zriya is the most important in after Binyan. But hala. Yesh min dea nefutza ba'olam, she'ikar achinuch nasa yidea nishat, letzari nefutza dea zu gam etzel morim. Even teachers believe that the most important chinuch is done through punishment. Maybe he even means through positive and negative reinforcement. Nahel echad shalcheder hotzi sefer nechmad al chinuch, aval kara lesefer, he wanted the sefer to sell. He called the sefer matai lahanish yelet, when to punish a child. Sha'alti oto, l'shem matzar chaya latet shem kazel sefer shalo, hareu kotev sham harbe yoter berechavot. He says then that your sefer is so good, so why did you call it by that name? Lama tzarech ha-mabat liot matai la'anish? Why is that your perspective? Maybe the answer was he wanted to sell. Next paragraph. B'nosei ha-anisha balidei bitui ratzon hashlita shel ha-arim. He says the psychological underpinning, here's where Revolbi goes again, where other mashgichim may not have gone before, and that is he tells us why there's a tendency for parents to punish, and that's for them to retain control. Adam argish kasher yesh biyado lahanish yesh lo shlita. If he has the power to punish, he has control. Now, Rabosai, I just want to add, without being marich, that shlita is very, very, very important. Revolbi, I don't think, is underestimating the shlita, the importance of shlita of parents over children. What he is saying, and it's very important, what he is saying, though, is that punishment is not the way in which parents evoke shlita over their children. Kach gam Rebbe b'kita shelo. Pam izdam in etzlenu adam shetziyat atzmo tafkid mashkiach. He tells the story that someone came to be a mashkiach in a yeshiva ktana, and Revolbi was, I guess, the nasi of the yeshiva, and the mashkiach asked, one very important question I have. Will I have the final say whether to kick the guy out of the school, to kick the student out of school? That was one of his important questions. So Revolbi said, in his mind, that passed the mashkiach. If he's looking at the ability to have ultimate punishment control, if that to him is one of the most important signs of the role of a menahel in a school, so then in such a case, then his perspective of chinuch is wrong. Skipping down to four lines from the bottom, kach gam etzel ha'orim im kol ha'mabatu matay lahanish zu gisha mu'uvutat. It undermines the entire relationship between parent and child, as we will go on to explain. You'll ask Akasha, he says. Vaharei, the Pasuk in Mishlei says in Perek Yigimel, Choshech Shifto Sonebino, someone who holds back the rod hates their child. Tzarech La'arbitz L'ben, you have to hit a child. So Revolbi has an interesting new definition of what it means to hit a child. First, before we say any other later chidushim after Revolbi, just kedai to internalize this beautiful idea. What does the word lahakot mean? What does it mean to hit? So Revolbi has an interesting mahalach. The pasuk anachnu motziim, we see the pasuk in Zechariah, famous nevu in Zechariah, ve'erez son ha'ariga, chen aniyeh etzon, ve'ekach li shnei maklos, ve'ekach karasi noyam, so there, the Nevuah describes the unification of Klal Yisrael, which is represented by two sticks. Hareish makel shebo chovlimu makim. There's one stick that you hit. V'yesh ol makel shegam bo mechanchim. And there's another rod that you hit, but you hit with ni'imus. Lahakot, the fascinating. Maybe to crunch it in a stark manner. Lahakot im ni'imus. Avol b'ni'imus. Makel noem. Tzarech ladat, claims Revolbi, shemakel noem hu gam makel. Avol einenu machiv. It doesn't hurt, but it's also a rod. And then he goes to repeat what many of others have said. Ein l'sha'er kama mazik ha'adam l'yel kashu makel oto makel shal mamash. Rabbi Yola Pan Haya Omer Lanu Tamid im yiladim rak b'derech tova. With children, the way today is only b'derech tova. And Rav Elyo Lapian concluded this point with something very, very stark. Rav Elyo Lapian said that he regrets every single hit. Now, he was a great man when he was young. He hit his children when they were young a little bit, and he had actually tremendous children, but he said that he regrets every single patch that he ever gave to his child. That's what Rav Elyo Lapian said. Now, I just have to say about myself, I can't say that I regret every patch that I gave my child, probably because I'm not of the Madrega of Rav Elyo Lapian, but what I can say was a couple of weeks ago on Shabbos, we were sitting around the table, and there was the children just mentioned that they remember a patch that I gave one of the children, Adayom Hazeh, and they described it vividly. They described it vividly. And to me, what was most embarrassing, I remember the event, and I remember that the child deserved the patch. But there were other children around, which was probably a mistake. It's probably a mistake. And they remember, every single one of them remember it vividly. And that is a tremendous, tremendous lesson. I had forgotten about it. As they mentioned, oh yeah, I remember when that happened. But the searing impression of it, and Chazal say that there is a place for a searing impression. You know, Chazal speak about the idea of someone to for Emes Beso to break a tad, but at the same time realize that can make a searing impression on children. So Revoldi goes on, and then I want to apply it to show that this idea of Maka is also follows in line with this idea of Makel Noam. One more paragraph. Chazal Omrim, Shekol Esav Esav Yeshlo Mazal HaMakev Om Lo Gadel. Every piece of grass has a mazal that hits it and says grow. Zot Omeret, Sheoto Koach HaMatzmiach, Nikra V'Pi Chazal, brilliant idea. Nikra V'Pi Chazal Makev, HaMakev Omer Gadel. In other words, any time we're raising a child up, we evoke the makeh. But the makeh could be from the imus, or the makeh could be from the in the other direction. Okay. So let's talk about it. What is rak b'derech hatova? What is it? How could we go about being mechanech entirely rak b'derech hatova? So here, there's an acronym that Radcliffe again has that's very good. It's called the CLEAR method. And CLEAR, we sort of ignore the E and the A. We're going to focus on the C, the L, and the R. The first, C, stands for comment. L stands for label, and only in the end is there the last, which is called reward. The way in which we're mechanech rak b'derech hatova starts with these three things: the comment, the label, and then the reward. Again, l'shita seinu, the first step. Within comment has three parts. Comment has first to acknowledge. So let's talk about a certain behavior. A behavior that a child is doing that is good. That is the most important makel, is to notice when the children are doing behaviors that are good. The parent says to the child, first, simply to acknowledge what it is. Then to praise the behavior, and then finally to show appreciation of that behavior. So let's give a practical example. So when let's talk about a child who has difficulty cleaning up. The best way to deal with that is to find the time when the child has managed to effectively clean up. Their room is a total mess. You ask the children to clean off the table. Let's say there are two or three children. You ask two or three children to clean off the table. And lo and behold, the table is clean. And the messy child also did 10%. 10%. He actually chipped in for a change. He helped out. So first the acknowledgement, then the praise. And here, Rabosai, let's just write all this out under comment. All right, we don't have time for this, right? So the acknowledge, the praise, and what's the third that we said? What?
Is appreciation.
Okay. So now, the praise is actually a very, very dangerous pitfall that many parents have. And that is, what many parents do is they'll praise and they'll say, wow, Shimmy, you really did a great job cleaning up the table. And they'll say something like, yesterday your room was really, really messy. I want you to clean up your room the way you just cleaned up the table. It would be great to see you clean up the room. No, none of that. No backwards, no backhanded compliments. Because you and I, when we get backhanded compliments when we're adults, what we always focus on is the negative parts. And children are also going to focus on the negative parts. So, Rak B'derech HaTova that Rav Eliyahu Lapyan is saying, the first step is the comment. There are both, yes? Deal.
If we praise that, does it reinforce the behavior of just cleaning up a little and that's enough?
No. No, because there is going to be time that we're going to have to address that their room is not clean. We will have to address that. Make sure that I do before the end of this whole set of shiurim. But right now, this is the first step. The first step of Rak B'derech HaTova is clear, is starting with the comment. Now this Rabosai I knew before. I can't say I always lived it, but I heard a beautiful chiddush in this regard. I saw that she said a beautiful chiddush, and I thought that was really fantastic. And that is the second thing. The L is the label, and that is this beautiful idea. I saw it today. I was very much inspired. I want to share this with you. I'm so excited about it. I want to share it. I'm going to tell this to my wife, Lena, there soon. Radcliffe suggests that a person sit down, could be a husband or wife, and write down 20 labels that they hope their child will one day be. 20 labels. Generous. Okay, we're in Kollel. It's not embarrassing the first few words. If it's a boy, a Talmud Chacham. There's nothing wrong with writing that down early on. 20 labels that you hope that the child will be. And the suggestion is to use that following the praise. So here was the praise, the comment. In other words, to praise them for that, and then the odds are that there's some type of label. What would one of those 20 things be? Let's say responsible. So now, aside from the acknowledgement and the praise, then what you also do with the next step, step number two, this is one, this is two. Step number two then is to access that label, one of those 20 labels that you've written down for your child. It could very well be that for some children the labels will overlap, but it's kedai also to think about, if there are multiple children, it's kedai to think about the child's personality and what's appropriate for their labels. I have two girls who are within 3 years of each other, and the labels that right now I hope that they're going to be are very, very different one from the other. Their personalities are very, very different. So each child should really get 20 labels. The nekuda that Sarah Hannah Radcliffe mentions, that I asked Rav Twersky and Dr. Yitzi Schechter tonight, was that she says that the labels should not go so far as to be whether the individual is good. Good, she says, is not an appropriate label. every single one of the labels that we're talking about, she says, we never talk about good or bad. We all know intuitively, we never say to a child, it goes without saying, or maybe we should say, the child does something wrong. And when we're saying something about the misbehavior, which we have to discuss sometime down the line, well, we don't want to emphasize, God forbid, the child is bad. That's one of the worst self-perceptions that the child could have. She argues, they don't even use the word good, because they're going to notice when you don't use that label of good, and then the diuk is going to be that I'm not good. Intuitively, when I read it, I said, the Torah speaks so many times from our value system, good versus bad is a real, real inherent value. So, Rav Tversky also felt that, no, if you emphasize that it's connected to the action, then even describing a child as being good, as being a child that's worthy of this type of behavior, worthy of this type of label, then it's okay, as long, and Dr. Schechter added this, as long as we make sure it's not just in general. Because sometimes the praise that the child gets is you're a good kid. And then, if the child just comes away with that, so then they never associate that with the behavior. But if there's that overall, there's a feeling of goodness, and it's buttressed by very particular things, so then maybe we would be mefakpek with that yisod, that one could actually label a child as being good. But there is a danger, kulei alma moda, that there is a danger if you only describe the child as being good, and it's not associated with something, then it's a hollow label. So these labels should be precise. So if you want, maybe there's tzvei dinim in the labels. There's a label, there's a klaliyistika label, good, special, and so on, general type of labels. And then there are specific labels like responsible, thoughtful, clever, etc., etc. Yes?
What's an example of where the kid would think that good is overly general?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen parents praise a child and say, you're good.
For doing something?
For doing something. And the child really, really doesn't pick up why exactly the parents said that they're good.
The kid does something helpful, they say, oh, what a good boy.
That half. For sure, there the child will associate. But a lot of times, it comes out in a vaguer, at the end of Friday night, right? You have a child that tends to run around to misbehave Friday night at the Shabbos meal. And the parent says, you were good tonight. The child doesn't know exactly, especially if it's a young child, 2, 3, 4 years old, they don't understand exactly what the parent means. They know that they're not supposed to turn over the soda. They know that they're not supposed to do that. But what exactly did they do that was good? And next week when they misbehave, and that's going to happen too, guaranteed, so when the parent says, what you did, when the parent says, turning over the soda was really not right, so in their brain is, tonight I was bad. Because last week I was klaliyistika good. That's what Radcliffe's chashash. Rav Tversky was mosif that the way to do it, even in the context of good, what he added was that the way to say it is that you're such a fine person, lo magia lecha. That's a classic yisod that Bali Musar say that to say to the child that's not appropriate for you. That's not who you are. That's not your essence. But it has to be more focused, not just be this general good. Rather, the child learns to understand a little bit more about the behaviors. Yeah.
I'm still not sure I understand when you can say good and they won't pick up that the alternative is making me bad. Wouldn't it be like if you ever say that you are good for doing that they'll realize the opposite is making them bad?
No. Because if the parents emphasize 80% of the time that they are good, I mean, that's what Sarah Chana Radcliffe's sheet is, exactly what you just said. I think what we were suggesting was no, that if the parents overall are really saying that you're good, and what they're pointing out is very specific, that this behavior is inappropriate, so then in such a case, then it's this behavior as opposed to who you are in general. I think that's the chiluk. So there's the klalis, that's why I said the two levels of labels. Yeah.
Is it appropriate to specifically label an action as good as opposed to saying that the child's completely good? And then, like, what this thing that you did was a good thing as opposed to you are good? And then,
right.
Will they imply...
What Gil's pointing out is that there's three possibilities here. One possibility is to forget the whole good entirely. The second possibility is to have good with a tziru, good as related to actions. And the third possibility is to have good at beklali with being ascribed to at beklal, and then every once in a while having that good related to actions. I think, in general, as long as what's emphasized also is the actions, and the child will learn to discern that the parents feel that they're good, and if they're bad, they'll be able to discern it's a particular action that was at play. In contrast to the parent that only praises that you're good, so then any time they get a constructive piece of constructive criticism, then the definition is that that they're bad. Our time is basically up. I had intended to add an arichus on rewards. So, Mirza Hashem, next time, what we're going to do is we'll pick up with that. So, let's just point out the following, that what we come away with is that Rak v'derech hatovah that Rabbi Yehuda Apian was talking about, according to our construct, starts with the comment, starts with the label, and only at the end do we talk about reward, which is probably the most important yisod. It brings up most important yisod in human interaction is the communication has to be movil. Communication is what has to carry the day. If the communication is being done right, then the rewards, as we're going to see, are going to become an asterisk. They're going to become a later seif. If the communication doesn't come first and it's backwards, so then in such a case, then we're going to see that it's mamish in olam hafuch. So that will pick up with Bezer Hashem next time. By the way, I wanted to say over the story that you told me. I want to get the details of that. The mamish brought out some.